or a vision. Well, if you ain't pretty. He broke off suddenly. He seemed to listen, and his fondling hands dropped from her person. What the hell? He muttered. Terrell's ears, that had been strained to breaking all these interminable hours, caught a low, swift, rhythmic patter of hoofs. A hoss coming. Must be Sam. When he got up, Terrell slid forward, her head toward the door. Sawtell strode over her. Sam's sure tearing. What's he running his hoss like that for? Terrell tried to rise, rose to one elbow, slid back again. She recognized that horse, Senko, and shuddering death seemed to run along her reviving nerves out of her body. Sawtell leaped out of the door, off the porch, to face up the canyon. His legs stood wide and bowed, his hair bristled. Terrell whispered, "It's Pecos," and she got up on one hand. Suddenly her stunned faculties reasserted themselves, but she was still so weak that she could scarcely slip into the two halves of the split shirt and hold the front together. That swift clatter had become a thrumming roar. "My God, it ain't Sam!" yelled Sawtell. Terrell's sight caught the black Senko against the gold of the sunset sky. He scattered dirt and gravel against the cabin. Then Pecos leaped out of the very air, his spurs jangling, his boots thudding as he hit the ground to confront the stricken Sawtell. Pecos was hatless. A white band spotted with blood bound his head. He was also coatless, vestless, and there were other stains of blood visible. His face was stone gray, except the leaping, terrible eyes. "Who in hell are you?" queried Pecos piercingly. "Sawtell, Breen Sawtell," replied the other hoarsely. He licked his lips. "What are you doing here?" "We come down to arrest one Hyde Smith." "Uh-huh. Who's we?" "Haines there and my men. Maybe you met Sam up at the Gulch Trail." "Maybe I did. Who shot these men?" "There was a hell of a fight. Young Lambeth was in it." "Terrell?" "Oh, Pecos, I'm all right," replied Terrell to that devastating call. "Sambo, you dead?" "No, boss, I ain't dead at all, but I's damn near dead." "Watson, who killed him?" flashed Pecos. "Must have stopped a stray bullet," replied Sawtell, his voice huskier. "Haines, you called him? Shot to pieces." "Who did that?" "Well, me and Bill had a little duel." "If you came down here to arrest me, why'd you fight?" "We come to arrest Hyde Smith. There's no Hyde here. I am Pecos Smith." "Pecos Smith?" "I said so. Are you hired of him? Did you shoot my brother at Heald's Ranch?" "I beat him to a gun. He forced me to draw." "Was you a partner to Williams and Adams?" "Yes, I'm the man." "Then, Pecos Smith, you're the man I'm after." "So I reckon. What are you going to do about it?" "Pecos, he swore he'd hang you," rolled out Sambo passionately. "Well, Sambo, I'm wasting a lot of time and gab, but I'm sure curious." "Boss, dis white trash, show treated our real terrible low down." "Terrell, you said you were all right." "I am, Pecos, only scared and weak. He tore me to pieces, and he found out I'm... Oh, Pecos, I can't tell you." Sawtell quailed. His eyes had been locked with Pecos. At last he sensed what Watson had hinted at and Haines had warned him of. "Can't tell me what?" called Pecos. Terrell was mute. If she had not been frozen there, leaning on her hand, she would have flopped down. But Pecos did not see her. His dancing gold-flecked eyes never oscillated a fraction from Sawtell. "Smith, I'm on to your dodge," spoke up Sawtell. It was a brazen voice of desperation. "This Terrell Lambeth is a girl. You've been living with her, pretending she was a boy. Don Felipe had a hunch. If any more comes of this meeting, you'll be spotted all over the Pecos country. But you ought to marry the girl. She must have been a decent little thing once." "Are you talking yet?" queried Pecos in a strange, almost inaudible voice, and perhaps that weakness spurred the desperate Sawtell on. Perhaps his mind grasped at straws. If he infuriated this Pecos Smith beyond control, he might gain an instant's advantage. "But whatever she was, she's sure a hussy now," rasped on Sawtell, his body flexing. "Uh-huh. She knows you're a rustler, a brand-burning cow thief. She admitted that. Terrell believed that? Sure, she's on to you. That money now." "Uh-huh." There might have been, to the strange sight of a madman, an indefinable break in Pecos. "That money, by God!" Then Sawtell bawled and lunged. There was a red flash, a burst, a boom, a cloud of smoke. Sawtell's gun went flipping high. He staggered back to fall upon the porch, a great spurt of blood squirting from his heart.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Eyes on Success, followed by Men's Health at 1:30.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 28 and snowing. Tonight, a few showers with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to show number 2304 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpey.
And I'm Pete Torpey.
The players play as hard as any sighted professional player plays. They run as hard, they hit as hard. And if they could play together, I think the professional sighted player would be amazed at how well a beat ball unsighted person can play.
And if you're not familiar with beat baseball, we'll be talking about that today.
We'll learn how the balls and other equipment are made, as well as about the surprising connection between Beep Baseball and the telephone company. We'll speak with John Cruz, lead volunteer for the group that assembles Beep Baseball equipment right here in Denver, Colorado, and Jay Kelly, chapter president of the Colorado Legacy West Pioneers, which provides most of the volunteer workforce. We'll also talk a little bit about how the game is played, but we did a prior show about 8 years ago in which we focused on the play of the game and just briefly touched on the equipment. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Jay Kelly.
Safety. Yes. Because of some of the tools, we have soldering irons, so you have to be careful not to burn yourself. We have X-Acto knives to cut around the pin after the ball is completed. So safety, always.
For the volunteers who make the equipment and for the players who use it.
Correct.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
APHConnectCenter.org, empowering people toward independence and success by providing blogs, information, and resources for individuals of all ages who are blind or visually impaired. Information and referral line are at 1-800-232-5463.
You are listening to Eyes on Success.
Success. Let's start by meeting John and Jay.
So we're sitting here at the Colorado Talking Books Library interviewing some people about making beep baseballs. Can you start by introducing yourself, John?
My name is John Cruz, and I am the lead volunteer for the beep ball group.
And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this 10, 12 years. You lose track of time. You just get involved with the projects, and you just lose track of time. So.
And Jay?
I'm Jay Kelly, and I'm chapter president of the Colorado Legacy West Pioneers, which is the group that has been doing beatball for well over 50 years. And it started in 1964 with Charlie Fairbanks, one of our volunteers in Colorado Springs, who had a blind family member and decided to make something for this family member to play ball. And he took it to the Pioneers, since he was a pioneer. And we are the volunteer organization of the telephone company. AT&T is our mother company. Before the divestiture, all the Baby Bells belonged to the same organization, and we just continued as the same organization, the Pioneers. And we had volunteers in every state shortly after the inception of the ball, and it ended up being only one group left in the late 80s and 90s, and our president, Mr. Timothy, who was president of the Colorado, Wyoming, Mountain Bell office, asked a group of people from Denver to go to New Jersey, collect all the material, all of the equipment and learn how to make the ball and bring it back to Denver, which they did. The volunteers that we have now are, we have two who are full members, life members, and three who are partners, who are, their spouses were telephone company employees, and the rest are volunteers that the Talking Book Library has graciously provided for us. And some of the volunteers were the groups who refurbished the recorders for the Talking Book Library.
And how long have you personally been involved?
I became Colorado Chapter President in 2007 when I became even more involved with BeatBall at that time.
Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners. Underwriting pairs the impact of targeted marketing with the integrity of community goodwill.
Learn more by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
That was a Beep Baseball right after pulling its pin. This week's focus topic is basically that ball and other equipment needed for the game and how it is all made in Denver, Colorado.
I'm guessing that many of our listeners are familiar with Beep Baseball, but for those who aren't, can you describe what this game is all about and how it works? It's a way of making essentially baseball accessible to people who can't see.
Beep Baseball is, a lot of people take it as a child's game. It's not. This is not a child's game. This is a game for adults. And it's basically what we do is we start with the regulation size softball. We then remove one flap and drill a hole in the ball that is large enough to hold a cylinder. And inside the cylinder, it's got the batteries, it's got the speaker. We actually got them from the phone company once they went out of business with the payphones. We got all the speakers from the payphones.
And now we have enough speakers that we can probably continue to make balls for at least another 15 years.
Well, thank you to the phone company for the demise of the payphone.
Yes.
Okay, the game, like I say, it's a regulation-sized softball, and it beeps. That enables the batter to hear the ball and be able to hit it with regular bat, but they can use wood or they can use metal, whatever they prefer to use. And the pitcher, the catcher, and the batter are all on the same team because they practice together.
And the pitcher and the catcher can see.
Yes. The pitcher and the catcher are sighted. The batter is not. And some of your visually impaired can actually see shadows. So to make it fair for all teams, they all have to wear blindfolds as well to go up to bat the ball and while they're in the field. And in the field, there are six players from the opposing team. And behind the six players, there are two people that are sighted. The fielders are numbered 1, 2, 3 on the right side, 4 through 6 on the left side. And behind them, I say there's two sighted people. All they can say, the sighted person, is a number. 1 or 6. That allows that individual who's got that number to let them know that the ball is coming their direction.
This prevents people from crashing into each other if they're going after the ball.
Correct. Although sometimes they do crash into one another anyway. In the meantime, the batter, he hits the ball, he's running to a base. Now, we only have two bases. You don't actually run bases. You just run to first and third, either or. There's an individual behind the behind home plate. It's got a box with a toggle switch on it to determine which one of the, it's random. I don't know, I'm not even sure how he selects which base will be. But he'll, using that toggle switch, he'll toggle it either to the left or to the right for one of the bases to start beeping. And then the batter will run to the base. If the batter gets to the base before a fielder gets to the ball, and the fielder's got to get the ball and pick it up over their head. But if a batter gets to the base before the fielder gets to the ball, it's a run. If the fielder gets to the ball and holds it above his head before the batter gets to the base, it's an out. That's how they play the game.
For specialty equipment, you use regulation bats, you use specialty balls, specialty bases, What else is special, and which of these do you guys make?
Well, currently, we're making the balls, the chargers, and I would guess we're still making the bases. I'm still trying to purchase a beeping or sounder for the bases, which now, because of the pandemic, a lot of supplies have gone. They're no longer being produced by some of the manufacturers that we had, and I am still trying to locate one that'll work. I have found some, but I haven't been able to get it to the individual that he can test it to see if it'll work. If it works, we're back in the base business. Because the base is about 48 inches high, and it's got a, similar to what the ball is, what's inside the ball, but it's got a different sounder, different speaker. Although the beeping noise may be similar. It's a little bit different because that way the fielders and the runner knows that there are different sounds.
When the players are playing, there cannot be any sound in the field because it detracts from the beeping noise of the ball or the base. So if a plane flies overhead or if a large truck goes by and it's rumbling, they will stop play until that noise goes away so that they can then hear the beeping of the ball. So they'll resume play at that time.
We learned that very quickly when we went to the World Series tournament. We went to the first game and somebody hit the ball and we started to clap and everybody else said, shh. And we figured that out.
Yes. You can cheer once the play is over. Either the runners reach the base or the fielders picked up the ball. Before that, you have to be quiet.
You talked about how runs are scored and how the scoring and outs are done. What about when you're pitching and you call balls and strikes? That's a little different, too, in this game, right?
Well, it's similar to regular ball. There is an umpire. Stands, of course, behind the catcher. And the umpire will determine whether or not it's a strike or a ball or whatever. And they only get three outs, but I'm thinking they get four strikes. Mm-hmm.
Have either of you ever tried playing this game with your eyes closed or blindfold?
No.
No.
As we were setting up the interview, you were telling us how widely these balls are distributed that you guys make. Can you give people an idea of how big of a global reach this is? You get parts from all over the world, and you distribute these balls all over the place.
Correct. A lot of our supplies come from, well, we get our balls now are coming from Vietnam. The batteries that are used inside of the balls are purchased from Germany. And I have been shipping to, there's a number of states here in the United States, to Taiwan, Costa Rica, Canada. I've had some interest from Australia, which I've offered to go down and show them how to play. And from some European countries as well. England has sent Britain. Somewhere in the Great Britain area, it sent me a lot of requests for balls or chargers or whatever. I've sent it to them, but a lot of them, because we don't pay for shipping if it's out of the country. If you want the items, you have to pay for your own shipping, because we don't make a profit on these balls.
Mm-hmm. So you implied that you could ship for free in the United States. Is that as free matter for the blind?
Correct. That only pertains to the balls and to the chargers. We could ship in the 48 states. Not Alaska or Hawaii.
You talked a little bit about actually making the ball. I was hoping you'd go into a little bit more detail there. But how long does it take to make one of these balls? And how many people are involved?
Currently, we have about 10 individuals that are involved in the production of the balls and chargers. Chargers, they can make them, 1 hour. Chargers. Balls, on the other hand, because of the waiting period, because we have to, we put a polymer substance inside of the cylinder in order to hold all the components together. And it's also for the, when they hit it with a bat, it's for like a concussion type.
Protection.
For the components. Mm-hmm. So if it weren't for the fact that we had to wait in order for this epoxy and polymer to dry up, we'd be able to produce a ball in 2 hours, 3 hours. I mean, from beginning to end. But we do have to wait. And we're only here on Fridays. We only work half a day on Fridays. So, and we do it in stages. Circuit boards, we'll work on it this week. Then we put the batteries in. Well, switches this week. Batteries in next week. And then we'll
put them inside of a cylinder, and then the following week, then they're poured the week after that, then the equipment will ball the week. So it'll take, in regular time, 4 to 5 weeks to get a ball completed.
I had never seen the switches to these balls. Describe how the beeping is turned on and off.
Well, the switch is placed on the circuit board. It's just a small switch that we pop inside of the circuit board, and we solder it in there. And there's a collar that holds it in as well. We just screw it into the back of the switch to hold it inside of there. Then we have that. It's a pin that goes inside. Once the batteries are in there and they're connected to a speaker, then it'll start to beep. The pin is put inside of there to open the circuit so it doesn't beep.
And you can reach the pin from outside the ball. This is something that is actually used in the course of playing the game.
Correct. We insert the pin once the ball has been completed for transportation, for shipment to the teams, and the pin will stay in the ball until they're ready to actually practice or play or whatever. And then they, not only do they pull the pin, but the pitcher will have a cadence, ready, pitch, or ball, one or the other, let the batter know that the ball is on its way.
How about the batteries? They don't last forever. Can you recharge them, or do you have to take apart the ball and put in new batteries?
No, the batteries are rechargeable. That's what the chargers are produced for, to recharge the batteries in the ball. And, you know, it is being hit by a bat. Sometimes the ball will last a considerable amount of time, meaning it'll complete an entire game. Other times, it'll last one batter. It depends on where it's hit, how hard it's hit, so, and then whether or not all the components inside were protected well enough. We hope to do it all good, but, you know, not always. There's a lot of times that we do run into problems with the balls, and they usually use a dozen balls in a game.
So you guys are really providing a great service here. Some of the parts are being donated, like through the phone company and all, but you're donating all your services to keep the cost of these balls relatively low, because they're not cheap to produce and send around.
That's correct. And the only thing we received actually from the phone company, other than some of the grants, are the speakers. Beyond that, we pay for all the components. We pay for all of them. Everything that goes inside of the ball or the bases, we pay. And several years ago, we were able to produce the cylinders ourselves. We were able to send people out, where it was a company who volunteered, or not volunteered, but they donated their equipment so we can produce our cylinders. We sent two guys out there to produce the cylinders, and it was all free, basically. We'd get the plastic for free and everything. Now, in the last 3 years, 4 years, we had to have them
find a company that would provide the cylinders for us. So now we have to pay for the cylinder as well as pay for the plastic that they're made of.
We don't usually discuss cost on this show, but this is kind of interesting. So you purchase huge boxes of regulation softballs. How much do they cost? And then how much do you actually sell the finished beep baseballs for?
Currently, the ball completed is right around $37, almost $38 for one ball.
And relative to the regulation softballs that you start with, what do they cost?
Regulation softball is probably $8 to $9, but then because of all of the electronic components and everything else we've inserted, it's about $37 and change.
And that includes all the laborers volunteer and the spaces donated by the Colorado Talking Books Library. So
Correct. You're really
keeping it down.
There is no charge for labor. And there's no charge for actually nothing, just the components. And currently, it's $37, almost $38 for a ball. We sell them for $35. So we're losing on each ball. But we are making some, not a lot, but we are making some money off the bases and the chargers. But we sell more balls than we do anything else. We rely on a lot of the grants that the phone company will give us, or other, and we have a lot of individuals out there that like what we're doing and will actually donate. They'll purchase a ball, like I say, it's $35. They'll purchase a ball, and sometimes they'll send us a check for $75, $100, so we can use that for whatever else we need.
I hope there are donuts involved for the volunteers. Although seriously, I guess this is very rewarding for you guys to be doing this, and it's a great social outlet too.
It is. It is. I think the guys come down here more for the, just to be with the camaraderie, with the individuals that are here, than to actually doing, well, they do enjoy doing the volunteer work and helping out the visually impaired, but it's more of the camaraderie where they get together and we laugh and joke and tease one another and what have you, but we do have a good time while we're working on the balls.
Yes, and the Pioneer motto is, we'll work for donuts.
Yeah.
Any volunteer project that we do, if we know it's going to be over an hour, donuts are generally provided for the volunteers.
Well, I have to say, when we walked in this morning, it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and that box of donuts was nearly full still. So there's a lot of self-control going on.
There is.
We had a member, George. He passed away, unfortunately, in 2018. But anyway, he would come in. George used to be our pourer, which pours the polymer. And I had purchased new T-shirts because someone was coming to do an interview for the Beatball.
Right.
5 minutes after George got here, his was full of glue.
From the polymer.
So we gave him another shirt to put on. We did the interview. 5 minutes later, George was full of glue. But George would always have a donut before he got started, do half the pour, come out, have another donut, go back and finish the pour and come back and have another donut.
3 or 4 donuts.
And George was probably, 100 pounds?
Probably. He wasn't very big.
No, he was about 5'6", 5'7", and about 100 pounds. But he ate those donuts like...
I know. But he was a heck of a worker.
Yes.
A heck of a worker. I mean, he would do his work as far as pouring the polymer substance into the... to the cylinders, getting them all ready for the rest of the guys to do what they needed to do. So he would do that constantly.
Well, it sounds like you guys certainly have a fun time doing this, and it is a great service that you're providing for lots of visually impaired people around the world and around the country.
Yes, it is. And the volunteers, we would be nowhere without our volunteers. And as Legacy West, which is our group here in the Denver metro area in Colorado, we have probably nationwide well over 500,000 volunteers for all the telephone companies, including Canada, which is Mountain Bell and all the Baby Bells that are still in existence. They are all members of the Pioneers, and we all do any type of volunteer work. You have docents at libraries, at zoos, at museums. They work in hospitals. They work in the schools as teacher's aides, as wherever help is needed, we have volunteers.
I understand your very first volunteer was someone we might have heard of.
Alexander Graham Bell, yes. And he went to our first conference in 1911. Our first annual conference, and that was held in Boston.
You are listening to Eyes on Success.
Success. Success. Success. Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about beat baseball, both the game and the equipment, how to find a team, how to volunteer, and how to contact John Cruz and Jay Kelly.
So if people are interested in finding out more about your organization and possibly volunteering to make beat baseballs, how can they do that?
Well, we do have, there's a website with the Pioneers, and I think they're going to put the beat ball.
Right. It's under legacywestpioneers.org/Colorado, and under that button, then you will find the beat ball. There's also a PayPal button where you can donate. We do, unfortunately, have people who write to us or email us and say, I just had my family member become blind, and we heard about beat ball, and we're trying to bring their spirits up. We can't afford a ball, and we would donate a ball.
We donate.
You know, $35, it's a lot of money, but it's not. You know, we try to keep a fund so that we can do that. We are going to be holding our annual Easter egg hunt, and this year we are partnering for 2023 with the Center for the Blind in Littleton, and we are going to hold the hunt there. We have two hunts going on at the same time, one for visually impaired children and one for their siblings.
I assume people can find out information about the Easter egg hunt on your website if they'd like?
We'll be putting information out. Right now, our schedule is for April 1st at the Center for the Blind. We invite all the metro area children to come to the hunt. We get our list from the Talking Book Library and send out from that. In Colorado Springs, we work with the School for the Deaf and Blind, and they have a hunt on their property, and we provide the baskets for them as well.
If somebody wanted to know more about Beep Baseball or how to get involved as a player, do you know the contact information for the umbrella organization?
The National Beep Ball Association, and they're the ones that hold the teams. But right now, it's just the National Beep Ball, NBBA.org. Get on the internet and try that. If you're interested in joining a team, if you're just interested in product, purchasing a ball or whatever, you can contact the Beep Ball organization directly. And that's beepball@legacywestpioneers.com.
Then if you're looking to volunteer, contact Terry Marcotte at the Colorado Talking Book Library. And she's the one that provides the volunteers for us here at the library.
Is there a phone number?
They don't necessarily need to call Terry, though. They can contact me directly.
Yeah. How would they contact you?
Email site at beepball@legacywestpioneers.com or a phone number, 720-331-7938.
In addition to their main website, the National Beep Baseball Association, or NBBA, also has a Facebook page at NBBA Public Relations, and they're on Twitter at NBBA.
And as usual, in case you missed any of that in the audio, you can find it in the show notes associated with this episode, episode 2304, at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. We'll also have a link to the previous episode in which we talked more about how beep baseball is played. And you know, beep baseball can be not only a great sport to keep you in shape, but also a great way of socializing with other people. We've done many episodes of Eyes on Success where we talked about sports and group activities. And if you're looking for those episodes, just use the handy search tool on our website and put in the term sports or any particular sport, and you'll be able to find links to the audio and show notes of those episodes. And, of course, we always like getting suggestions from our listeners. If there's a sport that we haven't covered that you're interested in, just send a note to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net and let us know.
That's it for show number 2304. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the Orbis Flying Eye Hospital. Vision impairment affects many people around the world. Unfortunately, it is difficult to reach and treat those who live in remote areas. We'll talk with Maria Montero, an ophthalmologist and assistant director of clinical services of the Orbis Flying Eye Hospital, about how their model addresses that problem.
Thanks for joining us this week, and we hope to catch you next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Men's Health, followed by USA Today at 2.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 29 and snowy. Tonight, a few showers with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health Magazine, here on site, into Sound Radio. First up, fiber, except without the vegetables. In a season when fresh produce seems as far away as a beach vacation, it's tough to eat enough fiber. That's where supplements can help, if you know what kind to look for. The claim: only 5% of Americans eat the recommended 25 to 38 grams of fiber daily. So why not boost your intake with a capsule or a powder? That way, as the products advertise, you reduce your cholesterol, manage your blood glucose level, and keep your heart healthy. Oh, and goodbye constipation. Well, what's actually true? Research has shown that fiber supplements can improve your cholesterol, blood glucose, heart health, and okay, yes, the regularity of your bowel movements. That said, supplements should never make up the majority of your fiber intake. No fiber product can replace the many benefits of eating fiber-rich food, which have disease-fighting antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals, and are really delicious. What to watch out for? Fiber supplements can lower the effectiveness of antidepressants like tricyclics, diabetes meds like metformin, heart prescriptions like digoxin, and even seizure scripts. Always speak with your doctor before taking a supplement. Should you take one? Sure, if your doc clears you and you can't hit your fiber goal through food. Start with half the recommended dose, then ramp up only after any digestion issues have subsided. Also, drink plenty of fluids to prevent constipation. And finally, what to look for. Find a supplement that has a third party tested, such as Informed Choice or NSF, so it's free from harmful substances. And ensure there's a mix of soluble, such as psyllium husk and inulin, and insoluble, also psyllium husk, but also methylcyclose. Fiber for the full range of benefits. And next, what COVID taught us about health. The height of the pandemic was brutal. 3 years after this all started, leading scientists tell us what hard-learned lessons have stuck when it comes to staying healthy now, and to whatever comes next. First up, risk management is huge. Before the pandemic, how often did people really think about defending yourself from a respiratory bug? Most people were shrugging off the risk. Respiratory viruses weren't that big a thing, says Dr. Amish Ajar, an infectious disease physician at Johns Hopkins. COVID forced us all to take serious viruses on a daily basis, and it highlighted the power our personal habits, hand washing, masking, getting vaccinated, determining which indoor situations to take the risk on or not, can have over the likelihood of getting sick. COVID also made it clear that not managing risks have consequences beyond a tough stay in the hospital, or in mild cases, losing a few sick days. One 2022 study found that persons infected with COVID were 33 times as likely to suffer from a first-time arterial blood clot during the first weeks of infection as someone who had never had the disease. Respiratory viruses can trigger other real medical emergencies, and these compounding factors can damage major organs and raise your risk of autoimmune conditions. Even relatively mild COVID can cramp your breathing and stamina for months. Two, vitamin D is a health hero. Pre-pandemic, It was easy to think of vitamin D as a bone-building nutrient found in milk, and that was kind of it. But then COVID-era research showed a high risk of testing positive for the disease among people with a vitamin D deficiency when compared with people whose levels were fine. Experts suspected that optimal amounts of vitamins may help shield you from COVID, as it does other respiratory illnesses. There's no clear conclusion on it yet, says Dr. Eric Figel. But doctors have long known that the nutrient plays a crucial role in the immune health, and about 1 in 3 American adults is not getting enough. Vitamin D helps your immune system across the board, says Dr. Figel. It rallies parts of the system to get working against microbes and may also reduce inflammation, a process that plays a role in a huge number of health conditions. These conditions include cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis, and even depression. If you already have enough vitamin D, extra won't benefit you. By the way, a blood test can tell you your level. To stay at a healthy amount, aim for 5 to 30 minutes of midday sunscreen-free sun exposure at least twice a week. Your body uses it to make its own vitamin D. And of course, eat D-rich foods. That's salmon, trout, and fortified cows or plant milk. If you don't eat these foods or get that much direct sunlight, consider taking a supplement as an insurance policy, especially in the wintertime. 3. Long COVID is helping us understand other illnesses. Even one of the pandemic's most devastating and puzzling legacies, long COVID, may help drive up our understanding of health. This wide swath of troubles that lingers for about half of the people who've had symptomatic COVID. Everything from joint pain to brain fog may not end up being unique to this virus. And it's creating a surge of interest in studying seemingly similar but often dismissed conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome and post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. We're still learning about long COVID, but among the theories about what causes these symptoms are organ damage, chronic inflammation, including of the central nervous system, and reservoirs of virus remaining in the body. These are some of the same factors scientists think that might be involved in CFS. Knowing more about long COVID could shed light on these other conditions. What's very clear, at least, is that these illnesses are valid. And finally, the basics are a big deal. Health issues that develop over time, like stroke and type 2 diabetes, have been on the rise for years. About 60% of U.S. adults have at least one chronic illness, while 4 in 10 have 2 or more. Yet until you're diagnosed with one, the dangers of chronic illness can feel far off. COVID made it clear that people with chronic conditions were at higher risk for severe illness, and it made people take an honest look at their health habits. Obesity, for instance, went from being something I'll get around to dealing with to being a risk factor for complications from a scary new virus. To clarify the synergy, Dr. Figel tells people to picture a glass. Every risk factor, eating excess sugar, not exercising, not treating high blood pressure, adds water to the cup, while healthy habits decrease the water level. COVID can push the water over the rim, and The takeaway here is more of a reminder, really. You know what to do. You can prevent chronic illnesses by eating well, being active, avoiding tobacco, and being moderate with alcohol. Those small lifestyle habits may well save your life. And now Men's Health answers these questions. Should I still do that? Well, hand washing for 20 seconds. Well, this is a standard. regardless of COVID or other diseases. Disinfecting groceries? No. The risk of transmission from touching a surface is low. The use of KN95 masks? Yes. For those who are high-risk people and certain recommended communities. And finally, the use of a cloth mask. Yeah, you can do it if you like. Good ones work okay. Just make sure you clean them. I want to take a break here to remind you that you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on site in DeSound Radio. You can listen to site in DeSound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at siteindesound.org. We are Site Into Sound Radio since 1967. Next up, Tom Arnold cheated death. Look who's laughing now. The comedian lost 80 pounds while keeping his sense of humor with the help of his life coach, Charles D'Angelo. Fade to black. Tom Arnold has seen the cinematic device countless times in his nearly 40 years of TV and film career. But this scene wasn't in the script. At home on the night of January 16, 2022, the vision in Arnold's right eye went dark as he was waiting for his children to get out of the bathtub. I felt a curtain come down, and it was black. The 63-year-old actor, comedian, recalls, I could feel it in my brain, too. It was like, that's weird. The following morning, Arnold drove himself to the doctor's office, thinking perhaps he had a floater in his eye. The staff told him to go to UCLA Medical Center immediately and enter the 24-hour stroke protocol. Diagnosis left him reeling. Hearing, you had a stroke, it puts you in a dark place, Arnold says. It shakes you. A battery test determined that he had suffered an attack, blocking blood to part of his brain, characterized as a level 1 on the NIH stroke scale. It wasn't severe enough to take his life, but it was severe enough to change it. What have I done to myself? I've let myself go, Arnold recalls thinking. Most of all, he wondered, what was next? I kept thinking, oh heck, now what? 9 months after the incident, Arnold feels and looks reborn. He's seated on a sofa in his home in Los Angeles, San Fernando Valley, beside Charles D'Angelo, a well-known weight loss and motivation coach. A few hours earlier, on this late September day, client and coach met in person for the first time since they began working together virtually 8 months prior. Arnold, who weighed 285 pounds at the time of his stroke, is now a lean 205. More telling than what he's lost is what he's gained. A renewed sense of awareness, accountability, and affirmation from D'Angelo, his life and weight loss coach and buddy. Arnold first met D'Angelo in September of 2018 at a charity event at the home of his friend and True Lives co-star, Arnold Schwarzenegger. You meet a lot of people in fitness business at Arnold's. After his stroke forced him to cancel an introductory Zoom, Arnold gave the idea of D'Angelo's coaching new consideration. The coach's personal story in books, such as Think and Grow Thin and Inner Guru, resonated to Arnold. He grew up in Iowa, liked that he was a Midwestern guy, and had practiced before he preached. D'Angelo lost 160 pounds in 2 years, going from 360 pounds to the taut physique of an NFL tight end. Arnold agreed to a virtual session, and then to taking it, as D'Angelo instructed him, a day at a time. It was a leap of faith based on D'Angelo's faith in him. I don't see the end of this like he does, but I'm going to try this, Arnold remembers thinking. I needed to transform my body. And your mind, D'Angelo interjects. Oh my God, yes, my mind, Arnold adds. The two guys started meeting virtually every 2 weeks, talking about the underlying issues behind Arnold's weight and the changes he would have to make to create lasting effects. So much of Tom's success is the function of consistency. He's an absolutely steady, no matter if he's here in California, Rome, Canada, or wherever he finds himself. For workouts, D'Angelo has Arnold perform cardio, working toward a time goal every session. Arnold prefers to use an elliptical trainer, followed by a recumbent bike. He has both in an outdoor gym he set up at his house. Gradually, he's worked his way up to 60 vigorous minutes and burns approximately 1,000 active calories per day, a stat he tracks along with his distance, pace, and resistance before sharing them with D'Angelo. He's kept at it, even through a heat wave. I breathe a lot, I get told, when I have my headphones on. I make noises. Arnold says of his huffing and puffing. At one point, the next-door neighbors asked what he was doing outside every day. She had no idea what I was up to, but I told her, don't worry, I'm just working out. Along with updating Arnold's exercise menu, D'Angelo implemented a consistent, easily reproduced, calorie-restricted diet that involves eating every 3 hours. Arnold starts each day with a protein shake. He'll stack on raw almonds, then have a turkey on a whole wheat sandwich for lunch with a small bag of baked chips. His mid-afternoon snack is low-fat yogurt with fruit, followed by a dinner of 8 to 10 ounces of skinless grilled chicken breast with steamed broccoli. He ends the night with a no-sugar-added fruit popsicle. He's also allowed unlimited zero-calorie drinks. D'Angelo recently began working basic free weight exercises into Arnold's routine. Every change is gradual and incremental. The way you did it, you lured me into it, he tells D'Angelo. Arnold first stopped drinking in the late 1980s, but suffered multiple relapses before becoming sober in 2016. For years, he felt he could control his weight or his addiction, but not both. When he was Chris Farley's sponsor, Arnold says, I told him, you can either be really overweight or you can do drugs. I believe that. But D'Angelo believes that food can play a role in filling other voids. What I've looked at with Tom is what's missing in your life, what needs to be worked on. Once that's addressed, then a low-level gratifier doesn't have the pull, just like alcohol or any other drug. Excavating those deep-rooted issues meant D'Angelo and Arnold's coach sessions often resembled intense talk therapy. The sharing was mutual. There's this big, muscular guy talking about feelings. That was awkward for me, Arnold jokes. He used to look in the mirror and do his best, just to make eye contact. Afraid to see his whole face, much less his whole body. Now Arnold says, I'm like, holy heck, who is that guy? He shaved his beard, which he calls sweatpants for the face. He had surpassed his original goal, to weigh what he did in the 1994 film True Lies. The target wasn't random, as Arnold was teaming up with Schwarzenegger again to film an episode of an upcoming Netflix spy series. The former Mr. Universe was stunned at Arnold's weight loss, telling him, you look amazing, and then announcing, we're doing a bike ride tomorrow. The validation helps, Arnold admits, though he's quick to joke. I've already worked out with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, it's all downhill from here, he says. I've also seen him naked in the shower. It's intimidating. When he began his journey with D'Angelo, Arnold had trouble focusing on his own needs. He said he wanted to make a change for his kids. Charles kept saying, no, You deserve this, Arnold says. When D'Angelo encouraged him to feel healthier and happier for himself, it reminded Arnold of the altitude he needed to succeed in his sobriety. You've got to be a bit of a jerk and say, I'm not doing this for anyone. I'm doing this for me. Me. Number one, I deserve this. Arnold says with a shrug, it's the same thing now. Next up, win in the long run. You may have to work another 20, 30, or even 40 years. Here's how five successful guys over 60 stay sharp and focused all day. We are living in the era of new longevity. Many of us will live significantly longer lives than any previous generation did. A number of studies are finding that many people now expect to work well under their 60s and 70s to fund their longer and healthier lives. And guess who's leading those older workforces? Older leaders. The average age of top performing CEOs by revenue across all industries is 59. And the average age of a small business owner in the United States is over 50. That's according to the Bradley Schumer, the author of The Super Age, Decoding Our Demographic Destinies. These business leaders are paving the way for all people, but especially older people, to thrive in the workplace. It's all a little daunting. 20, 30, perhaps 40 more years of work. And burnout is a real risk. To help you pace yourself this longer run, we asked five trailblazing older guys to share the habits that help them stay energized and focused all day. First up, Strauss Zelnick, founder and managing partner of Zelnick Media Capital, age 65. Named the fittest CEO in America by Men's Health, Strauss Zelnick is busy running his private equity company and serving as chairman and CEO of Take-Two Interactive Software, the brand behind the Grand Theft Auto franchise. And he thinks about staying stronger and sharp while he ages. Zelnick has amped up his exercise regime. He now works out a minimum of 5 times per week, but usually 8 to 10 times a week, lifting weights and doing high-intensity interval training. Zelnick makes it a point to train with people half his age for motivation and inspiration. But he also attributes his endurance to staying strong and sharp in life in general. Although he's maintained a strict high-protein eating plan, he's relaxed it a bit, adding some carbs to his diet. Plus, he's a non-drinker, with water about 64 ounces daily as his beverage of choice. His psychic fuel for sustaining focus? Coaching, mentoring, being of service providers to others, and keeping up his spiritual practices. Art Taylor, President, CEO of BBB Wise Giving Alliance, age 64. For more than 30 years, Art Taylor has been a senior executive in the nonprofit world. He also hosts a podcast called The Heart of Giving and is a lecturer at Columbia University. To keep in shape, Taylor walks 4 to 6 miles 4 days a week and plays golf 3 days a week in the summer. He fits in a 30-minute sweat session consisting of push-ups, core work, and stretching at least 2 days a week. Taylor eats only 2 meals a day, starting with a morning smoothie, egg whites, protein powder, spinach, avocado, banana, and other fruit. He has his second meal at 4 p.m. and limits red meat to no more than twice a month. On Sunday, he and his wife socialize with friends over a big brunch, his only meal for that day. He's also involved with his Episcopal Church in Clinton, Maryland, where he sings in the choir and delivers the homily several times a year. Taylor says he's found 3 more ways to stay mentally energized: prepping for, interviewing guests on his podcast, teaching ethics, and mentoring. Often he feels he's learning as much as or more than his mentees. Well, we've run out of time here today. I'll pick up the same article next week. We have three more profiles of executives living well past their 60s. As I've said, we've come to the end of our program. I've been reading Men's Health magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore, and this has been a production of Sight into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa.